With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hi there, this is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Thanks a lot for joining me for today's podcast, Coronavirus Facts Only. Over the next 20 minutes or so, we'll talk with two doctors about coronavirus and COVID-19. We'll get to our regular guest, Dr. Fred Buchholz, in a bit. But first, wanted to start out by talking about the Quarantine 15. Just what exactly is that? Let's ask Dr. Megan Renner. Dr. Renner is a family medicine physician for the SSM Health Medical Group in St. Charles County. Dr. Renner, thanks for joining us.
Of course.
So tell us, what is the Quarantine 15?
Well, lots of patients are finding themselves gaining a little bit of weight while they've been cooped up in the house, and they liken it to the freshman 15 that they'd seen in college and have called it the Quarantine 15, as you have obviously heard.
What are you hearing from your patients, or any of your patients telling you about that?
There have been a few, but for the most part, I think that they are in the minority. Thankfully, that really hasn't been a huge issue that I've been seeing with most of my patients. Many patients have been quarantined at home. A lot of them are really using this time to find creative ways to stay active and have been able to keep their weight stable.
So what do you think is contributing to the weight gain in those people who say they are having a problem with gaining some extra weight?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there aren't great studies about this yet since this is all very new, but from what I've been hearing, the patients who have been struggling with weight gain are reporting obstacles such as mindless eating, spending more time watching TV, decreased exercise equipment access. You know, their gyms have been closed. The stay-at-home orders have had some impact on that, and patients were afraid to leave the house. Additionally, a lot of people are just working from home and having a more sedentary lifestyle, whereas they were more active when they were at the office.
What about alcohol consumption?
Yeah, sure. Alcohol can definitely contribute. So if folks are turning to alcohol to keep themselves busy, then they certainly might find that their waistline is suffering because of it.
I know there's a lot of concern, Dr. Renner, about obesity being a risk factor for COVID-19. So I guess for those people who are already having trouble with their weight, this can only complicate matters, don't you think?
Well, again, I think the studies are still ongoing. We do know that obesity is a risk factor for many health conditions. And so if someone already struggles with weight, then this is definitely a good time that they can work on trying to develop some new fitness routines and work on some weight loss.
Tell us about that. What are you advising your patients who say they may be gaining weight during this quarantine period? What do you want them to do?
Well, I think right now is a great time to find a healthy way to find some more exercise. You know, maybe this is the time to start that walking program you've been meaning to start, dust off the bicycles from storage, even exploring some of the free workout videos online or even workout DVDs. Those are all really good ways that people can stay active. I tell my patients all the time, it doesn't matter what you do to move your body, you just have to find something that you enjoy that's safe and a healthy way to stay active. And there's a lot of things you can do without leaving the house.
I guess another thing you might want to think about is, if your home is your office now, maybe don't make your office in the kitchen.
That's a great idea.
What about meal planning? How important might meal planning be?
I think meal planning is great. That's actually one of the things that I usually touch on with my patients that are trying to lose weight. If you take the time to think about what you're going to eat for the week and get the meals ready, you find yourself eating healthier. You snack less, and a lot of the times we take part in less mindless eating, which definitely could contribute to weight gain.
So, Dr. Renner, what's your basic advice then to people that are listening that say, I think I'm gaining weight while I'm being a lot less active these days?
Well, thankfully, this has been a pretty short period, and most likely the weight gain can be easily reversed by just incorporating some healthy activities, start that walking program, come up with a creative way to stay active while staying safe and staying healthy.
And I think maybe when people end up going back to the office, they're going to find a lot less opportunities for food in the office, don't you think?
Yeah, probably. I think a lot of the offices are putting some restrictions on the cafeterias and areas where people previously congregated. So meal prepping is going to be really important to make sure that we have healthy choices when we're at the office.
Dr. Renner, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Megan Renner is a family medicine physician for the SSM Health Medical Group in St. Charles County. Now let's talk with Dr. Fred Buchold. Dr. Buchold is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchold, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
As we get back to opening up and going out more into public, I thought it might be important to talk a little bit about those who are most at risk for getting coronavirus down the road. Who do we need to watch out for, and who needs to take special care to avoid the risk of getting coronavirus?
Yeah, I think still the same things that we knew before. The elderly, certainly, and again, forgive me for this, but those, you know, probably above the age of 65 and above is kind of a general cutoff, although the older, probably the risk is higher. So those in their 80s or 90s, those with kind of conditions that we think kind of are related or put you at higher risk. So diabetes is one of those. COVID patients tend to have, there's more of them that have diabetes than in the general population that has diabetes. So that seems to be an interesting factor we're still looking at. And I think a big one still that I would be incredibly nervous about is this idea of immunosuppression. So this comes in a couple different forms. One is you have a medical condition that requires a treatment with a drug designed to reduce your immune system to treat this. So inflammatory bowel disease, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus would be probably the most common things you would see. Where you're on drugs that reduce your immune response because these diseases are caused by abnormal immune response. People that have gotten transplants, so a liver, a kidney, bone marrow transplant, those would be high-risk people where, you know, again, still I think I'd have an immense amount of caution kind of going out in public at this stage when the prevalence of how much COVID is in the community still is probably at a decent level. Those are probably the most at-risk populations and ones to be most worried about.
What about cancer patients?
Yeah, that depends. So cancer patients that are undergoing chemotherapy that reduces their immune system, so that tends to be people with blood tumors, so leukemia and lymphoma. There are some regimens for other types of cancer, like colon cancer or lung cancer, that also reduces your immune system. Those would be where I'd talk to your doctor. If you're getting active chemotherapy, those would be conditions to be concerned about as well. I would discuss that with your oncologist to really get a good sense of that. Those getting radiation, particularly to the lungs, COVID clearly affects the lungs. So when you're getting radiation, you're already having damage to lung tissue. You're trying to kill the cancer, but there's always still some surrounding lung that's being affected. And, you know, again, I think the more advanced cancer you have, the risk for blood clots tends to go up. We're also finding that COVID certainly affects the blood vessels. So, there'd be some caution with that, but that seems to be less of kind of an established relationship in terms of cancer patients and COVID. But I think it's you know, caution is a better part of valor here if you're going to really think about it.
Two other groups I wanted to ask you about. What about those with heart disease and what about people who are obese?
Yeah, again, both are those groups that when they get COVID tend to have a higher risk of morbidity, meaning getting sicker and certainly mortality, although to you know, to the degree, and I think age and some of the other comorbidities that go along with those are there. I think, you know, again, as we're starting to mobilize, I think some cautious action is okay. I mean, if you've had, you know, say you have known heart disease, you're well treated, you've been doing well for a while, you're living a vigorous lifestyle, you know, you don't really have any further issues other than just taking medicine for your blood pressure, maybe a blood thinner because you have a stent in your heart. And that's different than somebody that's got congestive heart failure where, you know, they take five steps and they have a hard time breathing. You know, so I think the fitness you have certainly contextualizes that a little bit, if that makes sense.
Sure. And minority groups?
Well, and again, I think part of a bigger national conversation we're having right now. And this is a group that was certainly vulnerable. And you saw that in very urban areas where there's a dependency on public transportation. And the types of jobs that many of them had were kind of in these essential fields. And it was a vulnerable population for a number of reasons. And, you know, one of the most interesting things talking about this, Fred, is you know, the work I do, I work in a hospital that has a privilege of caring for a lot of the Black community. And it's a known fact for somebody like me that you know, there's wide disparities in outcomes. And in St. Louis and in this country, you know, your zip code predicts your fate. You know, there's a difference of almost 20 years of life expectancy in St. Louis purely based on what zip code you're born in, which is just a stunning fact, but I don't think that's well known. It's kind of assumed it was something that was obvious, but you know, I think what's been interesting is I've had this dialogue that seems to be less known. And so, you know, the vast majority of patients that I see have a lot of complex medical issues as a result of bad access to care and a variety of other things. And as we talked before, COVID is just, you know, whatever scabs we could put over that wound, we could, and COVID has just ripped those scabs off and made this more apparent. So it still is a very vulnerable population, but the vulnerability there is, I think, much more systemic and you know, a much bigger issue to tackle, which is what, you know, as of this day, what we're going through right now, and I think is an important thing to talk about.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, a new study, a rigorous new study, has come out showing that hydroxychloroquine fails to prevent COVID-19. What's your reaction?
Yeah, so this was, again, in the pantheon of evidence, this is as good of a trial as we're going to do. This is what we call a randomized control trial, where they took people that basically were clearly exposed to somebody that was infected with COVID, you know, so a family member, a coworker that was in close proximity for good amount of time, and within 4 days gave them doses of hydroxychloroquine, and pretty heady doses, more than the treatment doses that we've been using for sick people when we were trying to determine these were effective for patients that have COVID that were quite ill. So pretty whopping doses to people, and they you know, either it would randomize people, so they would give, you know, when you sign up for the study, you would be randomly assigned by a computer to either get the drug or not get the drug. And if you didn't get the drug, you would get a placebo that looks like the pill, so you wouldn't know the difference. And then they gave the regimen and then saw if people got sick with COVID. And long story short, there was no difference in who got sick and who didn't get sick, meaning that the drug wasn't effective. And so, you know, there weren't any major harms noted. Again, these were fairly healthy people other than perhaps getting COVID. And they got a higher dose than that, you know, the usual treatment dose, which I thought was interesting. And I think the logic for that makes some sense is, you know, if you don't give enough or you give a lower dose, somebody's going to come back and argue with you that says, well, you didn't get an effective dose to prevent this. So they kind of gave a higher dose, still safe, but higher dose, and it didn't have the effect. So I think that just kind of shows that at least there's not data that suggests that giving hydroxychloroquine will prevent COVID should you be reasonably exposed to somebody, which is helpful. You know, at least it doesn't answer that question, but it's a pretty good study that kind of says there's really not much smoke here and therefore not much fire.
I see where President Trump's doctors are now coming out and saying that they kept a very close eye on the president when he was on that 2-week regimen of hydroxychloroquine. What do you know about that?
Yeah, so I assume that's what you get when you're the president. So they gave him a 2-week course to try to prevent transmission of COVID. I'm not sure the duration or the when he got that, other than the fact when he said he was taking it, assuming that's the time. But you know, there really isn't much to monitor. There's, you know, long term when we give these drugs to patients, particularly like with lupus or rheumatic rheumatoid arthritis. The one thing that we watch is just kind of, if you take it long term, it can affect your eyes. So we do, you make sure you get eye checks every, you know, 6 months or so. So for a 2-week course, it's probably not necessary. You know, but that, you know, I think other than that, I mean, it looks like they did some heart rhythm tracing, which again, I think that evidence is still kind of, you know, under a little bit more scrutiny right now, but that's fine. So, but, you know, they did what they could, which is reasonable to me.
In that report from the White House, his doctors had some updates on the president's physical condition. What did they say?
Yeah, so basically, they kind of gave the basic gist, and that was that his you know, blood pressure was pretty good. You don't mind going on a slight diatribe. I mean, they gave odd numbers for blood pressure and heart rate, which means they were using the machine. So I think if you're giving the president, I'd like to do my own blood pressure cuff check, which would always give an even number, and a pulse check, which would always usually be an even number. But that's just that's a medical educator in me. I just can spot when somebody's cheating a little bit, and I do it myself too. So don't hold me too much to that, or hold them too much to that. But aside from that, his blood pressure is good. He's somewhat overweight, which you know, is common in the United States. His cholesterol was pretty good. He's on something called rosuvastatin, or you might know it as Crestor, which is, you know, probably the strongest cholesterol medication out there. And he takes the daily aspirin, and then something called finasteride that is used for two things. It's either a prostate pill to help you pee a little bit more, which is common in elderly males, or it's used for hair growth as well. So it's called Propecia for that matter. So I don't know why he's taking that, and I'll leave it at that. I will say, you know, kind of interestingly, just, you know, what I always talk about when I have patients in their 60s and 70s, male patients particularly, is, you know, males in the United States die of cancer or heart disease by the vast majority. I mean, it's number one and number two cause of death. And, you know, the biggest predictor of your death, you might be interested to know, is your age. So the older you get, the more likely you are to die, which is no mystery to anybody. Even with those numbers looking good, you know, so his cholesterol is quite good. He's on that rosuvastatin, as I mentioned. His blood pressure is pretty good. You know, I just kind of plugged in. I had to make a couple assumptions about his cholesterol, but I gave him the benefit of the doubt of it gave his total cholesterol, but adding in the good cholesterol, HDL, giving a good number for that. And adding in LDL, which is what we typically call the bad cholesterol, I give him a good number for that, you know, kind of an optimistic number. His risk of having a stroke or heart attack the next 10 years is actually 18%. So in other words, if you think about that, if I have 5 Donald Trumps, one of them will have a heart attack or stroke in the next 5 to 10 years, which is a pretty high number. It's just kind of a factor of his age. And so I'm pleased to see he's on rosuvastatin, because that will reduce his risk. But it just shows that, you know, for most males, you know, generally by the age of 75, that they have a much higher risk of having heart disease. And the good numbers can kind of give you a false sense of security. I think it's so important to have good physical fitness, reduce stress, have an optimal weight. Those are all really important things on top of just having, quote unquote, good numbers, which don't, you know, say everything.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, I'm seeing a report from some New York hospitals that are warning doctors that some young patients they've seen were doing well, and then they rapidly deteriorated. What do you think's going on there?
Well, this is what makes medicine so darn hard. Is that's a known phenomenon with a lot of diseases of they look good and all of a sudden they crash. And the real trick is trying to figure out who looks good and is going to continue to look good versus who looks good and still have to have your antenna up. And, you know, I think they noted that is, you know, you can be fooled into complacency very quickly. And then, you know, somebody comes back 12 hours later, really, really ill. And, you know, I think it just kind of shows just to be aware of that. I mean, these are great things to say, here's my experience because I was really at the epicenter of this. This is what I saw. You know, so if you're a pediatrician in an emergency room or in a clinic seeing somebody and they've had COVID or they've been exposed to COVID, you know, kind of at least counseling parents what to look for, which is, you know, increased lethargy or weakness or high fevers, difficulties breathing. You know, those are things that, you know, hopefully the parent will bring the kid back in for a reevaluation. Or if you're evaluating kids, and again, this is not my field of expertise and this is not what I do, but it just kind of makes you watch them a little bit more. And it's the same thing with adults. You know, we, you know, the experience I think many of us have when we've had COVID patients is, you know, really the hard questions are, you see them in the emergency room, they look okay. And generally, in normal circumstances, you'd send them home, but you have to make a decision whether or not to admit them. And then once you get them admitted and they still look well, knowing particularly with COVID, that the complications kind of occur really kind of interestingly after the viral illness subsides a little bit. It's more kind of the body's reaction to that that's a little bit delayed that where we saw a lot of these complications. So it's at like day 8 to 12 to 15 from the infection. Which is very unusual. Usually a lot of patients have infections. They're really at the peak of the infection is when they get sick. And I think that's the hard part about that. Who's going to get sick and who's not? And we're still trying to figure that out or how we can predict that. And in the meantime, what that means is you just have to watch a little bit more closely, which may mean hospitalization. And again, if the COVID numbers increase a little bit or if you have a high number of patients you're seeing, that feels like you're hospital pretty quickly. And that becomes a problem, obviously.
Dr. Buchholz, I have a listener question for you, and I think it dovetails nicely with a study that's underway. This listener wants to know, I think I have COVID-19. I haven't had a test, but I'm just assuming I have it because of all of my symptoms. Is it okay to take ibuprofen now?
Yeah, it's been an interesting thing about whether or not this does this, and it seems like it's safe, and now, you know, there's a new trial coming out looking at using ibuprofen to treat COVID, or at least the symptoms of COVID. And again, I think it speaks to a broader point of just medical research is really, really hard. And in a time of a pandemic, when you're trying to rush things and get information out there to help providers and patients to figure out what to do, you know, the rigor of doing really good science is kind of put on the back burner a bit just because we're trying to figure out things that will help people. But now, you know, this is just more of a more rigorous trial to see, does this or does this not have effect, and let's do this the right way. You know, we've bought ourselves a little bit of space, at least in most of the Western countries. You know, obviously now this is really kind of ravaging Brazil and some other countries, but in the Western hemisphere, it seems to have, you know, it's still a massive issue, but the chaos we were dealing with a month ago or a month and a half ago, it seems to have subsided a bit. So we can start doing some more, you know, kind of thoughtful research, which frankly just takes a little bit more time and has to be a little bit more rigorous to really see this. So I think for now, again, there's been no clear evidence that it's caused harm. It hasn't really stood out. Some have reported that, others haven't. So I think it's safe to take. And I've recommended it and had plenty of colleagues that I've worked with that have been sick. I've been, you know, taking ibuprofen around the clock and they've been fine. So I think it's okay.
Dr. Buchholz, thanks a lot for your time again. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, Fred.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. That's all the time we have for today's podcast, Coronavirus Facts Only. Please join us again tomorrow.